Oh, we are now. Yes, David. You know, when I say mics are hot, that means that we're on the air. That's
Don asked
radio talk for.
and then somebody else said something. Yeah. And then somebody said, "Dave, your mic is hot."
Yeah, and I routinely don't put us on the air until about 10 seconds after I've, you know, given you the clue, because I know that there's anyway. We're here now. We just heard enjoyed Keith Cooper on the guitar with "Turn Your Eyes Upon Jesus." 12 minutes after the hour on a Monday, and of course, it being Monday, it is Don Clark from Garden Valley, Texas, on the line with us. Don, good morning. Happy Monday to you.
Well, good morning and happy Monday to you. And hopefully, you're having a good day there and not in the freezing. Freezing weather.
Yeah,
it's pretty good up until a couple minutes ago.
25 degrees with a north wind up to 30 miles an hour. This is going to be a blustery cold day.
Goodness. So,
and then there's snow in the forecast for Wednesday. So we're not even thinking about that now, though.
I thought you all were starting to have a little spring.
Well, it comes in fits and starts up here. And nature plays with our psyche here. So it picks you up, and then it slams you to the ground, then it picks you up, and it slams you to the ground again. And
eventually 17 degrees stable. Here at the Bay Lake Central weather forecast.
Oh, you got 17, eh? Mm-mm. Okay. Oh. Well, Don's already out tending grapes, aren't you, Don?
Well, we are, at least the vines. We don't have grapes on the vines yet, but some of them are beginning to bud.
Okay.
But we're supposed to have some cooler weather, I think, later tonight or something.
Okay.
Hopefully it won't get down in the freezing, because could be a problem for the new shoots.
Now, up here, we see when it's often in the spring when trees start to bud in some warm weather. Maybe there's 2 or 3 days of warm weather, and they start to bud, and then nature slaps them in the face and freezes them. And many of those trees recover, though. They'll still bud and leaf out normally. Do grapes do that? Or do you have one shot at this?
If the leaves actually get frozen, it'll kill them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they have a natural protection, but when it starts warming up, the sap, you know, the phloem gets going, and they lose their natural. It's like, actually like a glycol type of.
I got to tell you about this, because I just read about this. We walked outside. The other day, you know, we were surrounded by snow still, but it was starting to disappear, and we noticed all these little black specks on the deck, on the railings, and they were moving around. And I looked at my wife and I said, "You know what? I'll bet those are snow fleas." And she says, "Give me a break. What? Snow fleas?" Well, I looked them up, and that's exactly what they were. There are snow fleas. and the article explained that, and these are little tiny things, that they're bigger than the normal, like, dog fleas that you see, and they're kind of a really dark blue color, and they're arthropods, and they have a very unique kind of glycine in their system, antifreeze, basically, that in warmer temperatures it breaks down rapidly, and then their protection is gone, I guess. So they've got to stay cool. I don't know where they go in the summer. They must be under the ground. But they are interesting little critters, and they're filled with antifreeze, a natural occurring antifreeze. Scientists are now researching snow flea antifreeze for the purpose of preserving human organs for transplant, because it prevents ice crystals from forming, so they can preserve them at lower temperatures and make them last longer. And they're also using snow flea antifreeze for making better ice cream. So there.
It's a little crunchy.
It'll be a little crunchy. Little black specks in your vanilla.
Now, I don't know if this has any bearing or not, but scientists are, and it wasn't scientists, but there was a tourism agency in northern Greenland who was advertising a winter resort for snowflakes. There's a little tiny ring of really, really teeny tiny Airstream trailers that the snow fleas can check out for the winter.
Maybe a snow flea circus. They would have like a winter Olympics for snow fleas. They could do. Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's where most of them go.
There really are snow fleas. And in fact, I had a long interview with a biologist one time who knew all about them. I long maintained that this was an age-old Norwegian torture system where they would stake someone out in the snow and let the snow flip. But they don't bite. They don't bite. They're just there, little black specks.
Just nibble.
Oh boy, we got far off. I mean,
well, I'm just about to get back to that because
plants have the same defense mechanism for the cold. I mean, talking about the grapes earlier, they actually produce a similar type of glycol compound that protects them from freezing weather.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of plants have that ability. The trees, for example,
until the leaves come out, though, right? Or
once the leaves start coming out, once they start budding, that compound is broken down.
Okay.
And they don't have the protection anymore.
Okay. Well, interesting. And something else interesting brewing out there too. Scientists are now waving the flag that they have found incontrovertible evidence that the Big Bang happened here. And I'm reading this article. Dr. Don provided us with a couple of article links, which will be in our podcast later. In fact, I'll read you the headline here. You can see it over at theblaze.com. Scientists say they just found landmark evidence for the Big Bang that offers a window back to the beginning of time. Don, tell us about that. Does it do that, and how significant is this finding?
Oh, yes. Well, it's an interesting finding, for sure. It's a little difficult to explain, but I'll do my best.
Please do. Otherwise, I'd have David explain it, but that's what's
well, yeah, yeah.
You're the scientist in the group.
Go right ahead.
Well, you know, I could talk to the same guy that gave me the information about the snow flea resort.
No, he was no longer credible in my book.
Right. Anyway, here goes. Okay, so the Big Bang, they theorized that there should be some background radiation left over from the Big Bang. And so it was postulated that, well, if the Big Bang is if the universe is 3.8 billion years old, then we should have some very low levels of radiation, microwave radiation, around us, and we should be able to detect that if we could have sensitive enough instruments. Well, they built some very large microwave telescopes, basically, and so they searched the heavens for this cosmic microwave background radiation, and lo and behold, they found some, but the problem, when they first discovered this several years ago, I'll talk about the new study in a minute, they found that this radiation was uniform all over the universe. No matter where they looked, the temperature was the same. Very low temperatures, we're talking about in 2 to 3 Kelvin range, so absolute zero, not zero centigrade or zero Fahrenheit, but absolute zero Kelvin, or that is, you can't get any colder than zero. You know, it would be zero, and then we're only talking about 2 to 3 degrees, Kelvin, which is very, very cold.
So radiation has a temperature? I didn't realize that.
Everything has a temperature. Everything is okay. Moving around, and this is... you know, they converted the radiation that they were detecting into what temperature it was.
Okay.
Anyway, but they, you know, this puzzled them. It shouldn't have been uniform. But every place that they looked, they said, well, you know, I don't know. It looks like it's uniform. And the reason, the problem with that is that, well, gee, if the universe expanded, it should be non-uniform because the radiation, the energy initially wouldn't have had time to equilibrate before the universe expanded. So this was a problem for many, many years. And then a fellow by the name of Alan Guth came up and said, well, You know, it may not be a problem if we think that the universe initially expanded very, very rapidly, like 2 to 3 seconds after, or 10 to 30 seconds after the universe was formed. It expanded extremely rapidly, and that would give time for this energy to equilibrate, if you will, this initial big burst of energy to equilibrate. And then if we do the expansion, then we should see, you know, a uniform temperature. So that answered the uniform temperature problem, and most cosmologists latched on to that explanation. But they still were puzzled by, well, if that's the case, then we should see some ripples, if you will, in this background microwave radiation, this cosmic microwave background radiation. We should see some ripples. It shouldn't be completely uniform. There should be some slight variations and some patterns in the radiation. And as the, you know, planets in the sun and the stars were being formed, that should have caused some ripple in this uniform background radiation. So now, with all that background, excuse me, with all that background,
into all that this, background radiation, yeah.
Yeah, with all that information, now what's the new study? What has the new study found? Well, they have found, at least they think that they have found, a pattern in this background radiation, and so. They say, aha, you see, we've found it, the universe, we can explain it now, and it does look like the universe did expand very rapidly, not instantly, but a short time after the universe was formed.
I have a question, and it's basically not a scientific question, but a logical question. We start with an if-then statement. If this, then this. And then we see something that vaguely resembles the then part of the statement, whatever it was that was going to be then. And then we start to modify it in order to make it fit the if statement. Aren't we tampering with the relationship between those two things then? So that maybe it's not mutually exclusive or mutually inclusive. In other words, you could have this if, and then you have this then, but there could be several different ifs that cause that then, you know, the second half of the statement.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
And that's what we have here. I mean, obviously, you know, I mean, scientists do this all the time. They take a guess as to, you know, what happened, and based on your assumptions or hypothesis, then you can then go ahead and predict what you might see, and then either do the experiment or explain the experiment that you just did by some type of rational.
And then you stake your career, your credibility, your reputation on that, and you wind up defending those assumptions.
Of course, yes. But it's not uncommon in science to do this, to say, well, gee, we thought we would have this. We have this, but there's a problem with it, and somebody else comes up with an if. Well, what about this? If this happened, then we should see what we're seeing, but we should also see this. And so that's, if you will, kind of refining the model based on, you know, evidence or new evidence, and then going out and looking for further evidence to support your, in quote, refined model.
And I guess that's the only way it could proceed, seeing as how human beings are doing it and not computers. But I guess it hinges on how long you cling to the initial assumption before you give way and say, okay, well, we'll modify it.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, and that's true. Now, the Big Bangist, if that's a word, I just made it up.
It is now, yeah.
The cosmologist who, you know, really liked the Big Bang Theory, let me put it that way, as an explanation as to how all of this came about, they will hold on to that regardless of what evidence they find or don't find. Now, the interesting thing that we have to realize about our universe is that the universe is flat, and the universe is ordered in that, for example, it appears that our galaxy is in the center of the universe.
Now, when you say flat, do you mean two dimensions, or do you just mean a thin layer of something?
No, it's a thin, it's like a pancake.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, instead of a sphere,
mm-hmm.
you know, instead of a ball, it's a pancake.
Okay.
Now, if you would think, okay, you had an explosion in the beginning, you might expect to see a ball.
Yeah, that would be, well, if there was, you know, equal conditions all around the center point, yeah, I would think so.
Right.
There was nothing there.
That's not what we see. We mm-hmm. see a flat, pancake-like universe. Now, the other interesting thing is that it appears that our galaxy is in the center of the universe. You know, why is that? You know, maybe because it's the most important galaxy. I don't know. But then around the central galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, are other galaxies, and they are spaced I think they're spaced like a million light years apart.
Mm-hmm.
So you have concentric rings of galaxies around our galaxy. So that then creates an interesting picture. How could you have this much order to the universe and still say that, oh, well, we had this random event called the Big Bang, and it somehow formed the universe into what we see today.
Well, do Big Bang adherents agree that it's a pancake-shaped universe?
Yes. That was part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
With the constant temperatures everywhere this looks like it's the universe is flat. And so that was a problem. Yeah, but this supposed rapid expansion took care of the problem if you expand it in a flat way, mm-hmm. you know.
Okay.
And hence, you know, we should see patterns in this background radiation. And so they think that they have solved both problems by the observation that they recently made. I find this new data interesting because if we go back and look at Scripture, what does Scripture say about how the universe was formed?
Well,
we know, you know, Genesis in mm-hmm. chapter 1, for example, God said, "Let there be light," and there was light, and then God separated the light from the darkness, and I think we've talked about this in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get to verse 6 of chapter 1, God said, "Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters." I won't go through all my explanation of this, but if you consider the waters at this particular time, all the matter that's in the universe, not just water, but it's got water-like properties because it's flexible and fluid, and
mm-hmm.
This is saying, and the firmament is the word for that is rakia in Hebrew, and it means expanse. So in chapter 1 and in verse 6, after God creates all of the atomic particles and atoms and all the stuff of the universe.
He creates
all
matter, period, universe, yeah.
He puts an expanse between, the central sphere or the central mm-hmm. Body, if you will, and the stuff that's going to be out in the outermost regions of space.
Mm-hmm.
So we should expect to see, to find some evidence of this expanding or this expanse universe. The other thing that we find in Scripture is that two places in Isaiah, for example, Isaiah 42:5 says, "Thus saith God the Lord, He that created the heavens and stretched them out, He that spread forth the earth and that which cometh out of it, He that giveth the breath unto the people unto it, the spirit to them that walk therein." Anyway, so Isaiah 42:5 says that He stretches out the heavens, and in verse 45:12, "I have made the earth and created man upon it. I, even my hand, have stretched out the heavens, and all their host have I commanded." Again, we have God stretching out the heavens. So, should we see evidence of a stretchy heaven? according to Scripture, we should. If this particular piece of evidence that they have found turns out to be verified by other researchers, that we see patterns in this background microwave radiation that suggests that the heavens were stretched out very rapidly in the beginning, it just supports Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
because God said, you know, he placed a firmament initially in verse 6 of chapter 1 of Genesis, and then of course later in Isaiah he says that He has stretched out the heavens.
Is there basic conflict between the Big Bang theory at its most fundamental level and a creator God?
Yes.
What is it?
Yeah.
I mean, I can see where a Big Bang theorist would say, well, there was no God that had anything to do with it. It just happened. And, of course, they falter in explaining where matter came from then. How could you get something from nothing? That's where the creation model seems to make the most sense. But why not have God start it with a bang, you know?
It doesn't. I mean, one, he doesn't say that he shouted loudly. But he certainly, his voice certainly was the source of the energy that created the universe.
But the voice you're saying might be omnipresent, not at a particular point in wherever it was it started.
I mean, right.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's. And I won't go through the complete explanation, but in Genesis chapter 1, for example, when he says, you know, "Let there be light," mm-hmm. and there was light, and he separated light from the darkness. I believe that verse is pretty literal in that he is speaking into space-time. First, he creates space-time, and that's the medium that he is going to speak into. And then when he speaks, God's voice actually vibrates, causes ripples in space-time, which is light. And then he separates the light from the darkness, puts spin on light to separate it, and actually creates all the subatomic particles and all the atomic particles, and then all of matter that we have.
And you have explained this in some detail on past programs, and especially early on when Don first started with us a couple of years ago, we got into this. And it was an explanation of the physical effects of God's voice on matter. And we talked about everything really being a vibration of something, that everything has a frequency of vibration down to atoms and subatomic particles. And it's simply a matter that God, in His wisdom, knows how to affect their shape, their speed, their patterns, and determines it through his creative genius.
Right. So all of and that's assuming. I mean that whole hypothesis, or in my case, the guess as to how how you know the mechanism by which God spoke and all this other stuff. I mean as I explained. It's probably a couple of years ago, you know, God speaks into something and we speak into something. Well, we speak into air, and that causes vibrations in air. But if God actually spoke into space-time, in that there is something to space and that it, space is not empty, it is actually the substance of everything, you know, around us, and it's just the vibrations in space that we see either as light or as, you know, even gravitational waves or subatomic particles, mm-hmm. and which then make up the atomic particles. It's all vibrations. It's all, and you got vibrations that, you know, are going up and down. They're in three dimensions. They're in multiple dimensions. They're spinning around other, you know, vibrations, creating all this subatomic particles and particles. Mm-hmm. Light has this interesting property. We're diverging from the topic a little bit, but light has this interesting property of being both a particle and a wave. And if you do the typical wave experiment, which is having two slits mm-hmm. or two dots, for example, and let light pass through it, if you don't look at it, it has a wave pattern. But if you look at it, it behaves like particles. So it's like taking a shotgun, for example, and you have two holes in a metal plate, and all the BBs that pass through the small holes will create little patterns that you would expect, mm-hmm. you know, from shot through this hole. But if you don't look at it, they behave like waves, and then you get interference pattern on your film, for example, mm-hmm. that shows the wave properties. So it's interesting stuff. Why should matter, for example, condense if you're observing it, and then when you turn your head, it kind of expands? Mm-hmm. It's really interesting why God would do that, but that appears to be the strangeness of space and the strangeness of the matter that we're made from.
That's really in the way we perceive it that the difference lies then, yeah. Because light is light. It is what it is.
So if you take that concept a little bit further, and, you know, in Scripture, there is a Hebrew blessing that says, may God's face shine upon you. If God doesn't look at you, what happens?
Interesting idea there, yeah. Hey.
So, I don't know. Do you expand a little bit? Do you, are you not as whole as you should be? Well, I believe you're not. You're not like God originally created you to be. So of course we want God's face to shine upon us. Interesting. Hebrew is the original Old Testament. There's a lot of interesting things that just mm-hmm. make you wonder. You know, why was it said that way?
You know, and reducing it to English somehow it loses something too. It's not just our understanding, but it's like the language itself doesn't allow for the same degree of expression that the original Hebrew does, or at least we don't understand that. David, do you have a thought?
No, I was going to say the same thing. Okay. It seems like we're devolving.
Oh, yes.
It seems like with more languages, because we take on something else, we're not adding meaning, we're decreasing meaning. We're becoming more literal, mm-hmm. More exact, more specific, as opposed to more expansive.
Well, look at it. Here's another pattern to observe. There's analog and there's digital. Mm-hmm. Analog sound. If you make a recording, an analog recording of an analog recording of an analog recording, you gradually lose things. Mm-hmm. For example, if you look at a local television commercial done by your local cable company, the quantities usually support the colors kind of bleed and they're a little bit off. That's because there's copies of copies of copies of copies. Digital, on the other hand, it's identical from copy to copy to copy to copy. We have analog receptors in our heads here, our eyes. They're not digital receptors. And so we see in that way. We don't see digitally. So if, and I'm getting a little bit lost here, but that same difference that Dr. Don is describing is the analog-digital difference, too. I mean, there's like two universes out there. So, but the analog yep. devolves and the digital doesn't. The digital is pure and true and accurate. And so we're analog beings, I think. And I buy Dr. Don's theory of devolution. I really do.
Well, the whole earth, you know, groans for the day when the Lord, you know, will come back again. Mm. And I mean, the whole universe, it's all of God's, you know, yeah. creation. So we are heading for, if you will, a dilution of matter and a dilution of space and then mm-hmm. a degradation of everything. But going back to this, why is the Big Bang not in accordance with Scripture, is the order in which things were created. Because Big Bang says, well, okay, we had this big explosion, and then cosmic evolution steps in and says, well, then we had these particles, the particles condensed into atoms, the atoms condensed into dust, and the dust then condensed into stars, and stars exploded and made higher element atoms, and this had to happen over a period of time in order that you had all the atoms, for example, that we mm-hmm. see in the periodic table.
Well, is the difference then only the time required?
No, it's the sequence. Okay. You know, God said, I mean, and if you look in Genesis 1, mm-hmm. what was created first? I mean, yes, he said, let there be light, and, you know, of course, you've got the atoms and all that being created, but he creates the earth. He creates, you know, and he, the reason why we get this idea of Pangaea is from Genesis chapter 1, when it talks about the God gathering the seas together and the dry land appeared. It wasn't multiple lands, it was just one mm-hmm. chunk of land, and it, you know, appeared out of the seas. And he called the land, you know, the earth. And so we have, you know, we have this picture that the earth is created first, and on the third day, he brings forth plants, and then on the fourth day, he doesn't bring forth the sun and the moon and the stars until the fourth day. But that's completely backwards from cosmic evolution, where the sun, for example, being a star, would have been created first, and then either the earth spun out from the star, or mm-hmm. it came from someplace else, who knows where. But it was, created later, and then our moon spun off from the earth. And so it's a completely different story.
So the two are in total conflict, really, then. So
yeah, mm-hmm. they are. Mm-hmm. They are. So, but some elements may be of interest to us, like I said, this expansion, because Scripture does say that God stretched out the heavens, and he does say that he put a firmament between matter that was central, for example, from matter that's out in mm-hmm. the outermost regions of space, perhaps, and that's would be interesting to find, because if we our universe appears to be bounded, and it's not going to expand forever, but it, you know, there's one theory as to how all of this started, was because it was just a collapse of a previous universe mm-hmm. Into a very infinitesimal, almost nothing there dot, and then that exploded again and created another one, this expansion.
And we kind of yo-yo back and forth. Let me ask this question. Are there creation-minded scientists who are still looking for evidence of creation in order to explain it to the world at large in scientific terms, or is the only source Scripture? You know what I'm asking?
Of course, there's we have cosmologists that are Christians, mm-hmm. and we have Christians in every field of science. Mm-hmm. And every place that you look, the evidence points to creation, points to a creator, designer God, mm-hmm. who, this isn't a haphazard universe that we live in. This is a very well-designed universe, so well-designed that, God says that we have the stars, but they're there, the celestial bodies, or they're not only for telling time, but also for signs and seasons. And it's not just for, well, we have winter now we have summer, now mm-hmm. we've got, spring and fall. But what is the most important signs and seasons we should be looking towards? And of course, for us right now, that's the second coming of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And Jesus gave us a description as to what to look for. We should not be ignorant of the signs and the seasons that are actually going to be in the heavens, as well as when he comes back. Mm-hmm. One of those, of course, is that the sun will be darkened and the moon will turn into blood, which is called the blood moon.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, since this is the 14th of April, tomorrow, there will be a blood moon, and it's one of four that will take place over this next year and a half.
Oh, my goodness. What causes that?
It's a solar eclipse that causes the blood moon. Mm-hmm. So we know astronomically when it's going to occur and when it has occurred in the past. And this is a quartet, if you will, of blood moons. And interestingly enough, every time this has happened in the past, something major has happened in Israel or to the Jews.
I thought it was a lunar eclipse.
It is a lunar. Well, no, it's not a lunar eclipse. It's the eclipse of the sun, and when you eclipse the sun, the moon actually, because of the light coming or being obstructed from the sun, for example, it causes this special thing that even NASA calls it a blood moon.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Anyway, those are the type of things that we should be looking, mm-hmm. looking for, mm-hmm. In the heavens to read scripture, to understand it, because God has given us clues and links. I mean, it's not, why didn't he just come out and say, when this happens, look for me in the sky? And that's because we are to search the scriptures.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, interesting, interesting. So a blood moon tomorrow, huh?
A blood moon is supposed to happen tomorrow, yes.
Okay. Yeah, we'll 2:30, 2:45 tomorrow morning?
I don't know the time, but time is what time will it happen in Israel?
I observed one of those once from the top of a houseboat on Lake Shasta in California. It was one of the most amazing evenings I've spent. We knew there was going to be an eclipse, a solar eclipse, and so we watched that moon turn blood red. It really did.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
something it's
I'll never forget.
Attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, when I see something like that, it gets my attention. Actually, the last time that this occurred was in 1967 and 1968
mm-hmm.
Time frame, and what was happening to Israel at that time.
The 1967 war was there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. so I don't, Israel has a lot of enemies, are we somehow tied to all of this? We, meaning the United States,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, with the current administration that we have, anything is possible.
Well, we're all interdependent. Whatever happens there is bound to affect us in one way or another. So, and now we're getting an echo here. Are you folks hearing an echo from me?
Yes, I'm hearing an echo, of course.
Well, I think maybe we better wrap it up. We're talking with Dr. Don Clark, biochemist and a board member at Creation Moments. I would recommend a visit to creationmoments.com. You can do that from our website. I'm not sure that everybody's getting this echo out on listening to the broadcast, but it's bugging me. Oh, I think it just went away.
It's cleared up.
Yeah, it just went away. Up. Okay. We will post our conversation from this morning as a podcast on the website later today. Along with that will be two links to these two articles, one talking about the evidence for the Big Bang, the other one basically refuting the idea that they've latched onto anything new. And as always, Dr. Don, we're really grateful for your visit this morning. Oh, David. David's got another
comment. I have a finger up.
Yes, you do. I see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was reading through Genesis 1 and while you were talking, Don, and you know, one of the things that struck me, and I don't know that I've ever heard anybody making a big deal out of it, is that the earth was created, or the light was created first, and then the earth, and then the plants, and then later on the sun and the stars and the moon and etc. But plants need the sun to live.
That's right.
Produce chlorophyll. And is anybody made a big deal out of the order?
I have. When I give my Genesis 1 talk, I make a big deal out of it.
Okay.
And because, you know, and you would say, well, you know, God created the light in, in verse 3, I believe it is, 2 or 3. And, you know, he just spoke light into existence. But he also separated the light from the darkness. So after that process, everything was dark again. And so you had no light on the earth for the plants. And so the light obviously doesn't come until, you know, the greater light. He made the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. And, of course, we understand that to be the sun and the moon. So that didn't happen to the fourth day. So if the fourth day was a long period of time from the third day, then the plants wouldn't have survived. So right. It has to be a short period of time. And of course, you know, I believe it was a literal day.
Plants would have done just fine.
So the plants would have been okay for a day? Is that what they're?
Oh yeah, because the next day God creates the light. I mean, you can take any plant, put it in the dark, for a period of time, it will turn white because it's not making chlorophyll. It doesn't have it's not making the starch. It's going to be pretty anemic. Eventually, it'll die, but you can keep it in the dark for a short period of time, and the plant will be fine.
Mm. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, that explains that. Thank you.
Glad we took care of that one. Again, the podcast will be up later this morning. If you'd like to replay it or share it with other people, you can certainly do that. You just copy the URL from the top of your browser and send it around, maybe reference it on Facebook or wherever you go, because we'd love to get more people listening to Dr. Don, because we learn so much from him just every time he comes by. Don, have a great week, and we'll talk to you again next week, okay?
Okay, very good.
Take care. Billy Vaughn continues the music on A Broken Road Radio Monday morning.